A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's given Herman a brief. You're at a picnic in the park. A couple of other couples around. Maybe a long-term friend mixed in. You have to spend an entire afternoon with people you've never met and reveal absolutely nothing significant about yourself. No occupation, no where you live, no family names. And you can't come across as weird or evasive while doing it. Daniel wants the playbook.
I love this. This is the kind of challenge that separates the conversational artist from the people who just show up and hope nobody asks them anything. And the stakes are genuinely interesting, because if you fail, you either out yourself or you become that strange person at the picnic who wouldn't answer basic questions. Either way, you've lost.
Picnics are uniquely dangerous for this. At a conference, everyone expects networking. On a date, there's a script. Before you get into the system, I want to know what counts as a significant detail here. Daniel mentioned occupation, where you live, names of relatives, but what about, say, where you grew up? Is that significant?
I'd say yes, because it's a thread people can pull. You say, I grew up in Storrs, Connecticut, and suddenly someone's cousin went to UConn, and now they're asking about the dairy bar, and you're trapped in a specificity spiral. And the social contract says you're supposed to answer them.
The game is to honor the contract without actually delivering the goods.
Someone asks you a direct question, and instead of answering it, you give them something that makes them want to talk about themselves. You barely finish commenting on the weather before someone's asking what you do for a living.
That's faster than my average nap on set, and I'm a sloth.
The person who says, you know, I was just reading about this study on how people's jobs shape their vacation personalities. What's the most unlike your job thing you've ever done on a weekend? Has just turned the conversation inside out.
That's a very specific redirect.
It has to be specific. Vague deflections are detectable. The human brain has a pretty good radar for conversational dodging. What it doesn't register as dodging is when you seem genuinely more interested in the other person than in yourself. What you want is three anchor stories that are true-ish, boring, and deflect further probing.
I like that. Not lies, but adjacent to the truth.
Have you ever tried to identify every tree in a park? I got obsessed with this for about 3 weeks last spring. Now suddenly you're talking about tree identification, which is a topic, not a biography.
Did you actually do that?
I did, but that's beside the point. The point is, I've now given them something to respond to that has nothing to do with my employment history. And I've revealed a small, harmless detail. I like trees, which satisfies the social contract of sharing without actually sharing anything significant. Say you're a neurosurgeon. People want to know where you studied, what hospital, the most interesting case you've had. Say you're a film producer. They want to know what you've worked on. The curiosity engine kicks in.
The boring job principle.
They don't actually need your job title to feel that. They need engagement. Nobody has ever followed up. I'm in compliance with. Tell me more.
I once told someone I manage Leaf Distribution Networks, and they never asked another question. Of course, I actually do manage Leaf Distribution Networks. It's a sacred sloth tradition.
If you're first, you're stuck in one-on-one with the host or the earliest guest, and that's the hardest scenario to deflect in because there's no group dynamic to hide in. Once they've put you in the boring job category, their brain checks the box and moves on. You've satisfied the ritual without surrendering anything real.
Oh, what about where you live? That's the second question, usually.
Location deflection is trickier because people want to place you geographically. I live in the Heights. Tells them your neighborhood, your approximate income bracket, your commute patterns, which you have brought. This is important. It gives you a prop, a topic, and a reason to move around. Where should I put this? Is a complete social script for your first 30 seconds. I'm a few blocks from there. It sounds cooperative. You're giving them a mental map, but it's unpinpointable.
I'm taking notes.
That's a fantastic picnic blanket. Where did you find something that size? You've now given Sarah a question about a possession, which people love answering, and you've established yourself as warm and interested without revealing a single fact about yourself. Yeah, an older brother. He's an accountant. What about you? You answered. You gave a detail, and you immediately volleyed back. The talkers are a gift. You can spend an entire afternoon with a talker, and they'll walk away thinking you're a fascinating conversationalist because you asked good follow-up questions and laughed at their stories.
This falling back seems to be the engine that makes the whole thing work.
And there's solid research behind it. A Harvard study from 2021 on conversational reciprocity found that people who are asked detailed questions about themselves rate the asker as more likable and more socially skilled. Think about that. And question askers come in two varieties. There's the polite question asker, who's just making conversation and will happily be redirected. And then there's the interrogator.
The person who reveals nothing but asks excellent questions is perceived as charming, while the person who answers every question directly is just.
The reciprocity instinct is so strong that most people won't even notice you haven't shared anything equivalent. They're too busy enjoying the conversation about themselves.
Which is both a useful social hack and a slightly depressing commentary on human nature.
You give them an answer that is specific enough to feel like a disclosure, but is actually completely content-free. I work in compliance. What does that mean? Every industry has compliance, but it sounds like a real job. If they push further, compliance for what? You say cross-sector, mostly regulatory frameworks, and then immediately ask them about their own work with genuine curiosity.
That's the prep work. Build three anchor stories. Boring job, vague location, boring sibling. Practice them until they feel natural. But preparation only gets you so far. You give them the ladder quickly.
You throw the ladder at them. Regulatory frameworks is the verbal equivalent of a smoke bomb. They're still coughing and you're already asking about their quarterly projections. The bridge word is crucial. It needs to feel like a natural conversational flow, not a dodge.
Walk me through it.
Someone asks, where do you live? You say, oh, not far from here, but you mentioned you just moved. How are you finding the area? It acknowledges their question while redirecting. You absolutely brief the friend, but you can't make it sound like you're asking them to lie for you because that makes it weird.
It's true for basically everyone at a picnic.
That's the beauty of it. Not far is almost always true, and it satisfies the question's surface requirement without giving anything away. If they slip up, you have a recovery line ready. Oh, that was a whole previous life. I don't even think about that anymore. Anyway, Sarah was just telling us about the blanket situation. Acknowledge, dismiss, redirect.
You've clearly thought about this extensively.
I've been in situations where I wished I'd thought about it more. This is the wisdom of failure. What does your wife do? Becomes an opportunity to say, oh, I think a lot of couples are rethinking work-life balance these days, aren't they? I was reading this piece about how the 4-day week is gaining traction. You sound engaged, thoughtful, even intellectual. You answered nothing.
That's beautifully devious. You're not refusing to answer. You're answering a completely different question that nobody asked.
So where did you grow up? Are you married? Do you have kids? These are the biographical anchors that are hardest to deflect because they feel intrusive to dodge. The selective hearing gambit is especially useful for questions about family, relationships, anything personal. You take the topic and generalize it instantly.
How long have you been married? You know, I think the institution of marriage has changed so much in the last generation. What's your take on that?
You've turned a specific personal question into a philosophical discussion. The asker now has to think about their own opinion, which is much more engaging than hearing about your anniversary.
Far we've covered one-on-one dynamics, but Daniel's scenario is a picnic with multiple couples. Groups change the game entirely.
For me, it's probably the smell of a specific kind of cooking. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of home? People will remember you as a great conversationalist, even if you said almost nothing about yourself.
The attentive silence strategy. I've been deploying that one for years.
There's a reason it works. Social perception in groups is weirdly aggregate. If you contribute warmth and attention, people retroactively fill in the blanks with positive assumptions. The thematic pivot works for most of the big ones. What do you do? Becomes a conversation about the relationship between work and identity. Are you married? Becomes a discussion about how different cultures think about partnership.
The group is a kind of cover. You can disappear into the collective dynamic.
And you can extend this with what I call the bathroom refill escape. Every 45 minutes or so, excuse yourself to refill a drink or use the restroom. It's not rude, it's hydration. That's the calibration challenge. You can't be too polished. You need to sound like you're just thinking out loud. I don't know, I feel like is a great phrase.
45 minutes seems specific.
It's roughly the natural attention cycle for casual socializing. Conversations tend to turn over every 30 to 60 minutes in unstructured settings. The picnic is actually an ideal setting for this because there's so much ambient activity. Food is an incredible deflection tool. Oh, have you tried the hummus?
What about the direct assault? Someone corners you, looks you in the eye, and says, "But really, what do you do? I'm curious."
This is the moment of maximum danger. The direct question, asked with apparent sincerity, is hard to deflect without seeming evasive. This is where you use the self-deprecating pivot. I know, I'm so boring, I can't even make my job sound interesting. Food, children running around, a dog, a weird bird, someone's interesting hat. The outdoor social event is full of interruptions you can use. The key is to use them before the question lands, not after.
Most people will accept that because it makes them feel interesting by comparison.
But if you see the question forming, you can see it in their face, the slight lean forward, the preparatory breath. You preempt with, "Is that a kestrel?" That person is either socially oblivious or deliberately probing. Either way, you can escalate to the absurdly boring answer. I process insurance claims for commercial property damage. It's mostly spreadsheets. And I know that sounds intense, but we're talking about a sustained 4-hour performance here. You need active defense, not just passive deflection.
Let me push on something. Isn't there a point where this whole enterprise becomes exhausting? You're spending an entire afternoon managing your self-presentation. At what point do you just say something real?
That's a fair question, and I think the answer depends on why you're doing this. If Daniel's scenario is about privacy, not wanting strangers to know your business, then the effort is the price of that privacy.
Let's talk about the long game. 4 hours is a long time to maintain consistency. What happens when someone remembers your answer from hour one and asks a follow-up at hour three?
This is why the legend must be simple and shallow. If you said you work in logistics, you cannot later mention a client meeting or a design review. Your cover has to be a flat surface with no edges to catch on. Maybe you don't want to talk about work because you're between jobs and don't feel like explaining that. Maybe you're going through something personal and don't want to field questions about your family.
It's the conversational equivalent of a gray rectangle.
And if someone does ask a follow-up, so what kind of logistics? You have a pre-prepared, boring answer, mostly freight coordination, routing, scheduling, that kind of thing. Then immediately pivot. There's a real utility, and I think most people are bad at this. The default mode is either full disclosure or awkward silence. There's not a lot of middle ground in most people's social toolkits.
What about the exit? The picnic's winding down, people are saying goodbyes. You've successfully revealed nothing for 4 hours. How do you stick the landing?
The exit is where you can undo all your work if you're not careful. Because goodbyes are when people try to solidify the connection. We should do this again. What's your number? Let me find you on Instagram. Where do you guys live? Maybe we're neighbors. Neither pins you to a specific place. And the moved around answer has the added benefit of making follow-ups impossible. Which city? Which years? Why did you move? Too many threads.
I usually just say Mongolia and let people figure out the inconsistencies on their own.
You are not the model for this playbook, Korn.
I'm a cautionary example at best.
This was lovely. I feel like we barely scratched the surface on the tree identification thing, but that's probably a whole other picnic. You're signaling that the conversation was meaningful and incomplete, which is a satisfying social note, and you're already physically moving toward departure.
You're controlling the timing.
Controlling the timing is everything. If you wait for them to initiate the goodbye, they'll try to exchange information. If you initiate, you can do it while walking backward with a Tupperware container in your hand. It's very hard to ask someone for their Instagram handle when they're already 10 feet away and waving.
If they call after you. I was at the store buying milk. It was the one on Elm Street, the big one with the red sign, you know the one. And I was with my friend Dave, you don't know him. Meanwhile, the person telling the truth just says, "I was at the store."
That's a well-documented phenomenon in deception research. Truth-tellers assume shared context. Liars try to construct it. So if you need to recover from a slip, be the truth-teller. Short answer, no details, move on.
There's a philosophical layer here that I want to pull at. We've been talking about this as a tactical challenge, but there's something deeper about what it means to control your own narrative. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, the thematic pivot. I think there's a risk there that we should talk about, which is that you can come across as pretentious if you're not careful.
And pretension is almost as bad as evasion in terms of social friction. The person who turns "Where did you grow up?" into a Socratic dialogue about the nature of belonging is not making friends. People project onto you. They fill in the blanks with their own assumptions, which are often more flattering than the truth.
The blank canvas effect. You become whatever they imagine you to be.
What about you? Did you stay in one place? You've signaled awareness that you're being a little odd, which makes it charming instead of insufferable. There's a difference between "I won't tell you" and "I'd rather hear about you." The first is hostile. The second is generous.
That reframing is the whole game, isn't it? If you think of it as deception, you'll fail because deception feels bad and looks worse. Let's talk about the role of the long-term friend again. You mentioned briefing them, but what if the friend is bad at this? What if they're the kind of person who, when you say, "Don't mention my job," immediately says, "Oh, you mean your job as a..."
Then you don't brief them. Some friends cannot be briefed. They're what I call leaky vessels. If you have a leaky vessel in the mix, your strategy shifts from concealment to misdirection.
That's the terrifying part. Logistics is the compliance of the physical world.
Logistics, compliance, project management, consulting. These are the great gray walls of professional deflection. Nobody has ever asked a follow-up question about project management at a picnic.
What if someone at the picnic actually works in logistics?
Then you've hit the nightmare scenario and you pivot to, "Oh, I'm between things right now, actually thinking of getting into something completely different. What's the most interesting part of your work?" Redirect to their specific experience. People love being asked about their specific experience.
I'm noticing a pattern here. Almost every technique you're describing ultimately roots back to getting the other person to talk about themselves.
Because that's the fundamental insight. People's favorite topic is themselves. This isn't cynical, it's just true.
Which brings us to the open question. Is the ability to deflect personal questions a social skill or a social liability? In a world of oversharing, is the boring person actually the most interesting?
I think the answer depends on what you want from social interaction. If you want to be known, this playbook is counterproductive. And that feeling is what people remember. They don't remember your job title. They remember how they felt talking to you. And that's not weird. That's a choice.
Honestly, in 2026, with everything being recorded, posted, and archived forever, the ability to be selectively invisible is starting to look less like paranoia and more like wisdom.
The boring person at the picnic might be the only one who understands what privacy actually costs.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, Eton Five's players in the Yukon developed a peculiar habit of shouting the word "gloves" before every serve, even when already wearing them. A ritual that visiting English players found so baffling, they wrote letters home about it.
Gloves.
I have questions, but I'm not going to ask them.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone about it. Or better yet, try the playbook at your next picnic and see if anyone notices. What about when someone directly asks a question that you can't pivot from? Where do you live? Is a pretty direct question. You can't really philosophize your way out of that one.
You can, but it takes a lighter touch.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.